specific moments and seasons of feeling inadequate, and a few of those are fairly consistent. I shared a few weeks ago about being an intern in the campus ministry at Western Kentucky University after I graduated, and I was 23. And another piece to that story was in February of that academic year, the guy who was that I was interning under took a job and moved away. So I was left by myself to manage this campus ministry of about 80 students, and I definitely didn't know what I was doing. When I was 25 and working at a church in Florida, the minister there that I worked with ran into some problems and had to leave. So again, I was left there by myself with a church of about 300, and I definitely didn't know what I was doing. And when I was about 30 and hadn't been here very long, Ken Neller, who was our lead minister, moved to Harding to teach. And I wasn't the only staff member back then, but I know, again, I definitely didn't know what I was doing at that time. And the biggest one may be when Zach was born. I was 29. And for the first week or so after he came home from the hospital, man, it had been 2 weeks, our parents stayed to help us out. But then they all left. And I remember watching them drive off. And I looked at Zach and said, "You're in trouble because we don't know what we're doing." So in all of these situations, I face the reality that I'm not enough. And I wonder, when have you faced that reality, or you've had the feeling that you're not enough? You're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not rich enough. You're not tough enough. And you're thinking, "I can't succeed at this because I am not fill in the blank, I am not blank enough." What goes into your blank? You just got hired for a new job and nobody thinks you can do it. You're dating someone and you're not sure you measure up, like Jack on This Is Us. He knows he's not enough in the eyes of Rebecca's father. You're planning to pop the question, but you know you won't be able to match the creativity and sensationalism of others around you who've done this lately. You don't know how to make a scrapbook. You can't afford a skywriter or a hot air balloon. You know, I asked Mary the question, sitting outside of a Pizza Hut in San Antonio, Texas. Terrible. It was a terrible idea. Got a high rating on the lame-o-meter. I was definitely not enough compared to the way students are doing this and younger people are doing this today. So maybe you're a new parent or a fresh parent again, and the more you do this, the less competent you feel. And at this point, you've thrown just about all your parenting theories in the trash can. Or maybe you've had an opportunity to talk to someone about Jesus, but you don't believe you know enough or that you're not good enough to do that. You know, we can always find someone out there doing anything that we might be doing a little better. I even realize right now you're choosing to watch this message that I'm sharing, but it's no secret. You could tune into so many other resources and videos and podcasts and church services and hear more gifted or more energetic or more insightful people, yet here we are and we've decided this is enough. You know, way back in the beginning of the year, I talked for a couple of weeks about Moses. And I seem to come back to Moses quite often, you know, in my teaching life. His story and his experience with God, they draw me in. They're very real. He is who I'd like to be. I feel a connection with him. And I especially do that as he struggles with the clear call from God, colliding with his own fears of not being enough. When God showed up in the desert, Moses didn't have a lack of words to fill in the blank. I am not this. I'm not enough, God. I'm not blank enough. But we'll get to that in a few minutes. He has all kinds of things he can fill that in. Remember when Moses dreamed of being a leader? His homegrown attempt had a disastrous impact. He lived daily with the injustices meted out on the Israelites by the Egyptian slave drivers until he could take it no longer. So he killed one of those evil men and he hid him in the sand. And when word got back to Pharaoh about what Moses had done, Pharaoh responded by putting a contract on his head. Because of the situation Moses created, he became a fugitive in the desert of Midian. He had nowhere else to go. Israel wasn't interested in following him. He had no option to return back to the palace, so he fled to the desert. And we find him sitting by a well in the desert of Midian. When you don't feel like you're enough, where do you run? Maybe a bowl of ice cream, a bottle of bourbon, back to work. Maybe you take it out on others, or perhaps you just shut down altogether. I bet We all have a favorite escape route. Some routes are unhealthier than others, but most are usually not helpful. And it's fairly easy at this point in Moses' life to understand why he wouldn't feel like he's enough. For 40 years, he's been a shepherd. Vocationally, that's at the bottom of the ladder. It's like working in the proverbial mailroom or being the guy who cleans up the locker room after a game. And to pile on, the sheep he was shepherding weren't even his. And his pasture land was in Nowheresville. And in addition, to make things worse, he lives in his father-in-law's basement. I mean, these are perfect ingredients to explain his feelings of inadequacy. I'm going to read the first 10 verses of chapter 3 in Exodus. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, and the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I'll go over and see this strange sight, why this bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. And God said, don't come any closer. Take off your sandals, for the place where you're standing is holy ground. And then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And at this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. And the Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I'm concerned about their suffering. So I've come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. To say Moses was surprised by this message would have been a huge understatement. He had no idea when he woke up that morning that God would give him a new job description. I'm sending you to Pharaoh in Egypt to get the Israelites out of there. Now here's a question. Where do you suppose the last place on earth Moses would want to go? Don't you know he was pounded with a tidal wave of memories and emotions as he heard the sound of the word Egypt? He had surely healed up quite a bit from that 40-year-old nightmare, but God just reopened the wound and he poured salt in it. And in Moses' response to God's message, we see a man who had a dream 40 years ago, and he tried that once, and it didn't go really well. He's been there, and he's done that, and he's not real interested. He'd rather lead sheep around a desert. They follow better than people do. Let your eyes roam back through these verses and pay close attention to what God says and how he says it. In verse 6, he says, I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Verse 7, I have seen, I have heard, I am concerned. Verse 8, I have come down. Verse 9, I have seen. Verse 10, I am sending. 7 times God says, I am or I have in just a few sentences. You see, God offers a very clear view of who is initiating this project. It's unmistakably his seal on the deal. It's his idea. It's his set of blueprints. And check out Moses' response in verse 11. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? He says to God, who am I? That's a bit of an odd but understandable response after all the claims that God just made, the 4 I haves, the 3 I ams. But notice, there are 0 you ares. There are no you haves pointed in Moses' direction. God wasn't in the slightest bit focused on Moses, who he is or who he isn't. Moses blew by all of the I ams, and he blew by the I haves from God except one. And this is where he got stuck. God said to him, I am sending you to Pharaoh. Now, in this sentence, there are 3 nouns. There are 3 characters. The I is God, the you is Moses, and the third, you have Pharaoh. And in Moses' mind, in this moment, God was the least significant of those 3. He was terrified of Pharaoh. He was terrified of being sent. He was terrified of going back to Egypt, especially to the palace. Who am I, he says, that I should go to Pharaoh? His response totally omitted the first character. Moses dropped God off. And it's now just about Moses and Pharaoh. And if that's the case, if God is out of the picture, then Moses has every right to be terrified of the thought of being sent to Pharaoh. But check out what God does. He reinserts himself back into the picture. He has five highly important words for Moses. I will be with you. With you. There's the fifth one. I will be with you. Moses, he says, this isn't about you. This is about what I'm going to do. And then God tells Moses, he says this in the NIV, he words it, I have sent you. Now, I never noticed the tense in this line before. I have sent you. God doesn't say, I am sending you or I plan to send you. God says, Moses, consider yourself already sent. This is a done deal. The check's in the mail. We can't get it back. Moses, you're going. Now, let's work out the details. Here's a good line that I read, which I think seems appropriate. Confidence comes not from the awareness of your competence, but from the assurance of God's power. Moses questioned, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? That question dredges up the accusation he heard 40 years ago, the accusation which fueled his escape to the desert. The day after Moses killed the Egyptian, he ran across two of his own people fighting. Gregory just read about this in Acts 7. He tried to break it up, and then one of those guys said these words to Moses, who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you going to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? Here's how we would have said it. Who do you think you are, Moses? And that question has rattled around in his soul for 40 years. And it comes out at the burning bush in response to God's message. Moses says, who am I? Who am I? And all of these doubts rushed within him like a flood of inadequacy. And those doubts were rooted deep within his soul. And as we move through this intriguing conversation between God and Moses down past verse 10, we see Moses' thoughts about not being enough on display. First off, Moses says, I don't have enough clout. I'm not connected enough to pull this off. Verse 13, Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what's his name? Then what shall I tell him? I need to know somebody to pull this off. Next, he says, I'm not believable enough. Chapter 4 and verse 1, what if they don't believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord didn't appoint you? Here's the next reason why he believes he isn't enough. It's in verse 10. Oh, Lord, I've never been very eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. Now, this excuse is interesting because of two realities. First one's this. In Acts 7:22, Moses is described as being powerful in speech, totally opposite of his self-assessment. I've heard some Bible students say Moses has a stutter, but I've not really found that confirmed anywhere in the Bible. Could it be that Moses had lost all the confidence that he had once 40 years ago? You see, when you lack for confidence, the last place you'd want to be is in front of Pharaoh making wild demands like releasing all of your slave labor. Moses honestly believes he's absolutely the wrong man for this job. I don't believe he has a speech problem, but he may have a heart problem. A heart that once pumped courage and confidence through his body now pumps only regret and fear. And his heart is screaming, I am not enough for this task. Now, the other reality comes later. If you study the dynamic between Moses and Aaron and Pharaoh's ongoing conversation once they get into the plagues, you'll notice a subtle shift as the plagues progress. At first, Aaron seems to be right in the mix. Aaron is the one who threw down the staff. Aaron stretched out the staff over the waters when the frogs invaded. Aaron stretched out the staff and struck the dust when all the gnats infested everything. At first, God said to Moses, tell Aaron to take the staff. Tell Aaron to stretch out his hand. But by the fourth plague, God isn't telling Moses to tell Aaron anything. And Aaron isn't the one with the staff in his hand anymore. Moses has the staff. And Moses responds to Pharaoh. And over time, Moses begins to believe in God and his plan again. And Moses grows confident again, this time in God, not in himself. Moses could speak well all along. He just needed to believe again. And he finds out God wasn't lying when he said, I will help you speak and I will teach you what to say. Just go. Finally, Moses simply says in chapter 4 and verse 13, O Lord, please send someone else to do this. Moses says to God, I'm simply not enough. I'm not your man. I'm not your man. I read a good summary of what Moses would have been better off to remember right about now. God could have said this. Okay, Moses, let's review. You were born with a contract on your head, and I hid you. You were discovered in the Nile, and I found you. Your mother became your nanny. I nurtured you. You received the best education Egypt had to offer. I taught you. You believed in your destiny, acted impulsively, and had to escape. I protected you. You tucked yourself away in the desert. I've been preparing you. And now I come to you in this burning bush. I've got a job for you, Moses. I will never let go of you. I've never thought about this before, but one way to look at this is to see how specifically God had prepared Moses for this task. For 40 years, Moses had led sheep around the same exact wilderness where God planned to lead Israel. Moses knew the topography, where the watering holes were, the location of the most passable routes. And as a shepherd, he had experience managing unruly flocks. His time in the Egyptian palace taught him how to govern and how to write and implement laws. It's possible that no one person on earth at that time was better trained by God for this job than Moses. I imagine most all of you remember watching Karate Kid. You know, there are two versions. Us old people remember the 1984 version, and the younger folks remember the 2010 version. There's some sequels in there. But, you know, it's the story centers around a relationship between Mr. Miyagi, a soft-spoken, simple, older man with karate experience, and Danielson, you know, a high school kid who becomes a student and his friend. And when we think about Karate Kid, the line most quoted from the movie is what? Wax on, wax off, right? Mr. Miyagi puts Daniel through all kinds of chores on his property. He paints fences, he scrubs floors, he waxes cars, wax on, wax off. And Daniel doesn't get it. He thinks all of this work is a useless waste of time. And the truth is, Mr. Miyagi is teaching him the movements to become a skilled fighter. And until Daniel is in the ring, he doesn't understand that. Could it be the tedium in the desert paired with time in the palace had all been put into motion to prepare Moses to lead a nation? Could it be that some of the experiences you've had to endure have prepared you or are preparing you for something you'll face down the road? Every one of those times I ended up in an interim ministry role, I became better equipped to handle the next one. And some of the most difficult situations I faced in the church in Florida prepared me to handle situations that I have faced here. And I handled them better because of what I had been through. God knows what he's doing. Here's what seems to be God's style. It's consistent with the radical reversal theme on which his kingdom operates. While we try to partner with the most powerful or the brightest or the most popular, God looks for people who simply take him at his word. He didn't need Moses' ability. He was looking for his availability. I'm beginning to believe feeling inadequate, feeling that you're not enough, that's a prerequisite for being used by God. For 40 years, Moses had been enrolled in the course entitled, You Are Not Enough. And now he's ready to register for a new course. It's called, I Am Enough. If you go back to verse 13 and 14 in chapter 3, Moses is asking for some credentials to flash, a reason for people to believe that he's on a mission from God. And here's what God says, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. I am who I am. God wants Moses to embrace the simple truth. I am all that you need. I am enough. Let's fast forward and see how in John's gospel, he uses the same truth in revealing Jesus' identity to us. John shows us that the I am addresses our greatest needs. To those in darkness, Jesus says, I am the light. To those who are thirsty, Jesus says, I am the living water. To those who are lost, Jesus says, I am the way. To those who are confused, Jesus says, I am the truth. To those who fear death, Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. To those who need a fresh start, Jesus says, I am the door. To those who need cared for, Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. God takes your thoughts and my thoughts of I am not enough and boldly proclaims, you are not, but I am. I am the center of everything. I'm running the show. I'm always the same. I'm the creator of life. I'm the source. I'm your healer. I'm your forgiver. I'm your transformer. I'm your savior. I'm your refuge. I am who I am. And you are not. You're not able to be any of these things. So here's my invitation for you this morning. I invite you to take some time before today ends and write down the ways you feel you're not enough. Not smart enough, not compassionate enough, not generous enough, not disciplined enough, not focused enough, not willing enough, not selfless enough. And now after each one of the ways that you're not enough, then write down this line, but God is enough. I'm not created enough, but God is enough. I'm not righteous enough, but God is. I'm not resourceful enough, but God is enough. I'm not loving enough, but God is enough. I am not, but God is. He is enough. Today, set aside all the ways you're not enough and make a shift, beginning looking at your world through the lens of what I am can do, what He can do in you, and what He can do through you, and what He can do with you, and what He can do for you. While you will never be enough, He will always be enough.